We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We are live on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by Rival Fantasy. Visit rivalfantasy.com or download the app today for a better way to play daily fantasy baseball. This is the afternoon of Saturday, June 3rd. I'm Drew Silva. With me here is Chris Crawford. So last Saturday, we analyzed the current 5x5 scoring leaders among hitters, average, runs scored, homers, RBIs, stolen bases, and each picked out a name that we thought was for real and a name we should maybe fade for each one of those categories. This week, we'll do the same, but for the pitching categories, wins, stupid wins, ERA, whip, strikeouts, and our old friend, the save. First, we'll get through some headlines from the later weekday slate of games. The lead story right now, there wasn't a ton from the newswire on Saturday morning and afternoon. Jose Altuve is out of the Astros lineup with oblique discomfort on Saturday. That's worth watching. It's being called precautionary for now, but you hear oblique and, you know, precautionary, and we kind of know where this sometimes leads. Hopefully it really is just nothing. Ellie De La Cruz is still at AAA Louisville. He's in their lineup on Saturday, so he's not coming up to Cincinnati yet. I guess that probably needs daily updating. It seems like that might happen within the next week. I would even say within the next couple of days, perhaps. Yeah. I'll say the lead story is Chris Sale, who was placed on the injured list Friday with what's being called shoulder inflammation. He felt some discomfort in his shoulder in the fourth inning of his start Thursday against the Reds. Got a couple of mound visits in that inning. You worry that he might have tried to pitch through it and made this injury worse. Red Sox manager Alex Cora even expressed concern about that Cora felt like he should have pulled Sale at the first sign of trouble. But you can only really rely on what the pitcher is telling you in that situation. Sale was sent for an MRI and a CT scan on Friday. It sounds like the results of those imaging scans are still being evaluated. This could be a situation where he seeks multiple opinions before a real diagnosis is offered to the public. And it's hard to just diagnose shoulder injuries in general. I'd say either way, it's going to be a while before Sale returns. He did say he doesn't think it's something that will require surgery, but again, who knows with shoulder injuries. What's our campaign slogan, Chris? Ban shoulders 2023. Is that what we settled on?
Yeah, ban shoulders 2023. And unfortunately, it'll be ban shoulders 2024, 25, 26. It's a big bummer,
man. We're going to solve this issue.
We're going to get it done. I admire your optimism. It's such a bummer because he was pitching so well, too. Like, he'd given up just one run or no more than two runs in his last four starts. He had a 2.42 ERA with a 30-4 strikeout to walk ratio in the month of May. He was pitching well in that game against the Reds when he left. You know, that's the thing, though, is what version will we see when we get him back, and when will we get him back? Because unfortunately, injuries have been a thing with Chris Sale in the past. He is a guy who has an unorthodox pitching motion that certainly has, you know, given a lot of really quality outings over his career. One of the best most dominant left-handed pitchers that I've seen in my time, but it kind of sounds like we're going to be without him for a while. Some positive news. We're going to see an MLB debut today.
I wanted to
go, please.
I wanted to talk more. Sorry to cut you off. I'm bad at
speaking
when we do these shows. Well, yeah, I mean, I agree that he's been up and down a lot this year, but like from a fantasy standpoint, pretty effective with like you mentioned, the strikeouts, 71 strikeouts in 59 innings, only 15 walks, a 4.5 ADRA. I'm also thinking about like what the Red Sox will do internally. Corey Kluber is back from paternity leave. He was demoted to the bullpen before that paternity leave list stint. And then actually came out in relief in the first game of this doubleheader Saturday against the Rays. So I don't really know what that means for Boston's overall pitching plan moving forward. They're not really well equipped to handle a starting pitcher like Sale getting injured. And I mean, you don't want Kluber in fantasy, even if he's going to be, you know,
no,
settled back into a rotation spot. He's been pretty awful this season, an ERA over 6 through 9 starts. Yeah, we'll just have to wait to hear more on Sale. And you were about to talk about maybe a young pitcher who could be kind of a plug and play option, perhaps, if for fantasy managers who have rostered Sale.
Yeah, potentially. It's going to be interesting to see how long he's going to be up. But that pitcher is Brian Wu, who is going to make his MLB debut. We're recording right around 1 o'clock Pacific time, the best time zone. But he's going to be pitching against the Texas Rangers. That's a tough debut. He's taking the spot of Marco Gonzalez. Gonzalez dealing with some injury issues. They haven't really said how long this is going to be for Gonzalez the last time I checked, but Marco Gonzalez has not been good. And I think Brian Wu has a chance to maybe steal his rotation spot. Look, this was a right-hander who was in AA Arkansas, posted a 2.05 ERA, a 59-12 strikeout to walk ratio, a whip below 0.9, and batters were only hitting 174 against this guy. Now, Wu was not a huge prospect coming out of his draft. He was drafted with the 174th pick out of Cal Poly. Rehab through Tommy John surgery, velocity has gone quite a bit up, now shows a well above average slider, a pretty good change, throws pretty much everything for strikes. I don't think he's a fantasy ace ever, but I can see him being like a fantasy mid rotation guy. Question's going to be, is he going to stay in the rotation? I would consider him maybe for an ad, but probably not using him against that loaded Texas Rangers lineup. That Rangers lineup is so good, Drew. I don't think people give it nearly enough credit for how good it's been. But he's certainly somebody I would consider as an add to my roster. And then, you know, take a wait-and-see approach. If you have to drop him, so be it. But it'll be very interesting to see how Wu handles that Texas lineup today.
I thought this question was interesting. I mean, do we want to speculate on when Ellie De La Cruz is coming up, or we kind of said it'll probably be within the next week. I mean, the Super 2 deadline like just passed, right? Or we're approaching it.
Getting close.
It's kind of a floating date anyway. And then also, Justin Steele, I forgot. That's worth mentioning. He was diagnosed Friday with a mild forearm strain, they're calling it. The Cubs have not placed him on the IL yet, but I think that will happen. Sure. Hopefully it really is just mild and he just needs to miss a turn or two in their rotation. He's been really good this year, but I would expect that he is going to be placed on the IL. It'll probably happen Sunday because then they can retroactive it to Wednesday or Thursday so that they can get him back within 12 days if they do that. Right. Jordan Walker has been recalled by the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
Started in right field and batted eighth Friday night at Pittsburgh, his first major league game since April 23rd. He went 1-for-5 with a single and a strikeout in what was a brutal 7-5 loss for St. Louis. They had a 5-0 lead at one point.
Yeah.
Giovanni Gallegos got pulverized in the seventh inning, I believe it was, gave up a go-ahead grand slam to Cabrian Hayes. Just another ugly night in what go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to just tell you that there was some good that came out of that for a person that I buy baseball cards from, hit a $50,000 parlay because of that game when Carlos Santana hit that grand slam. We were live streaming.
Was it Santana or Hayes? Oh, no, Hayes hit a homer.
Yes. Yeah. And then because I just remember the grand slam Tana thing, but he won a $50,000 parlay. for the Pirates winning that baseball game. So there was some good that came out of it. Hopefully that means he'll be discounting some of my baseball cards because he just won 50 grand and maybe make some of the breaks a little bit cheaper. But I do think that's pretty cool. Shout out to Wolf's Card Breaks. That's an awesome thing to have. 50 grand on a parlay. I've never actually bet on a parlay because I can't in this state, but I've never come close to anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, how this Jordan Walker situation has been handled, I almost want like a full reset on it. Oh. I was excited that he made the opening day roster, but there were reasons, you know, mainly defensive, to keep him down out of the gate, watch him have success in what would have been his first, taste of AAA. And it's not like this team, this Cardinals team, this depth chart was in immediate need of outfield help. No. There were just a lot of reasons to keep him down. Hindsight, you know, is always easier than reality. I just worry that Cardinals have toyed too much with one of their best hitting prospects since, I want to say, like Albert Pujols, but he wasn't even really a prospect. He just emerged out of nowhere. Oscar Torres, right. Like maybe.
Yeah.
Walker was hitting a ton of ground balls when the Cardinals sent him down. They wanted him to work on lofting the ball more. But you look at what he was swinging at, the type of pitches, he seemed to really want to go after low in the zone stuff,
sure,
which isn't a great idea with his build. So maybe it's more about like pitch recognition than launch angle. I don't know. Like Walker did say a couple weeks ago that he kind of abandoned what the Cardinals told him to do when they sent him down because he felt like he was overthinking everything. He had a brutal stretch offensively when they first demoted him. Stop laughing, Chris. This is not funny for me. It's just funny. None of it is like this stuff that you want from a 21-year-old. He just turned 21 years old, like a potential future star. I'd try him again in fantasy with the raw tools, with a path for everyday playing time right now. We should mention that Lars Nootbaar was placed on the injured list Friday with a lower back contusion. That was the corresponding 26-man roster move for Walker. It's not a serious injury with Nootbaar. He should be ready to return around the time he's first eligible to be activated. I don't know. It opens the door to where the Cardinals actually need Walker right now. You know, there's another update on their outfield situation with Tyler O'Neill. He's been shut down for another 10 days and his recovery from a lower back injury continues to hit like these roadblocks. I think this is his third setback already. He like tries to resume baseball activities and then has to stop just a few days in. A new round of tests were done on O'Neill's back late this week. They didn't show anything structurally problematic, but I think you can rule O'Neill out through at least the end of June, I'd say. Like, and what does that do to his trade value as the Cardinals keep looking, probably, hopefully, for a starting pitcher? They have one of the worst records in the National League. Only the Rockies have a better record, or they might even be like tied in the win column. But a positive run differential for the Cardinals. They're just 5.5 games back of the Brewers for first place in the National League Central. And you look at that lineup that Milwaukee is having to run out there these days, like that's a very catchable team. They've got decisions to make too on, do they want to trade one of their big starters? Like, because I mean, they did this last year with Josh Hader when they were leading the division and then, you know, traded their dominant closer to the Padres because they kind of had to, because he was getting really a strong phrase, but he was getting too expensive for what is the smallest market team in baseball. I mean, like if it's crazy to say, but if I had to pick right now, and I'm a pessimistic Cardinals fan, if people can't tell, I would pick the Cardinals to win that division. And I don't know how they're going to get it done. I think maybe there's like a managerial front office move coming. Someone's going to take the blame for how bad things have gone. But they're like right in the hunt, even though they've been so bad. And I would say it's the most talented current major league roster in that division, even still. They need
pitching. Oh boy, do they ever. Yeah, I would totally pick them to win the division. And that's more darning with faint praise than a huge compliment to them. I just don't think anybody in that division is all that good. Milwaukee, I do think they can be aggressive at the deadline because they have some unbelievable outfield depth in their prospects. So if they want to go that route, they certainly can improve. Jack Soterio obviously isn't getting traded. But I did think this stat, by the way, speaking of Walker, was interesting from my buddy RJ Anderson. He notes that his AAA numbers weren't impressive within themselves, but it's worth noting that his average launch angle of 11.3 was more than 8 degrees higher than the mark he posted in his in the majors. So lifting the ball was at least, even if he was ignoring it, it was much better going in those AAA games than it was in St. Louis. Tristan McKenzie is back, Drew, or he will be back on Sunday. He has missed the entire season while dealing with a shoulder problem, a teres major muscle strain that happened in his final Cactus League start. I remember that now, that was just terrible timing. Look, this was one of the best right-handers in baseball last year, whether you remember it or not, a 2.96 ERA in 191 one-third innings, 190 strikeouts against 25 walks, a whip of 0.95. You know, he looks pretty solid, I guess, in his ramp-up starts. It's more about getting healthy than anything else with those numbers. I wouldn't pay too close attention to them. It's just more about getting those pitch counts up. I think there might be some wear and, you know, some rust to wear off. Wow, that was a lot of word jumble there, Chris Crawford. I think McKenzie's going to be just fine. I think he is somebody that I was kind of fading before the season just because
same.
I don't think he's not a fantasy ace type guy. I think he's good. I think, and Cleveland does such a good job with these arms. But I do think if he's somehow someone who's still available in your fantasy league, I would certainly go get him.
Yeah, I mean, he was being drafted as a top 100 guy, like a you know, a top 17-ish starter in some leagues. Like that was a little aggressive for me. He was great last year, but there were a lot of ways to like poke holes in what he was doing and to expect some regression and ERA. And I don't think he's ever going to be like an elite strikeout guy, but if you've been holding on to him in an IL spot, you got to feel pretty excited that he's finally going to give you some value. We'll talk a bunch more pitchers. We're going to analyze those current fantasy leaderboards on the pitching side, pitchers we like, pitchers we don't believe in quite as much. First, a quick commercial break. A new MLB season means it's time for a new kind of daily fantasy baseball. Rival Fantasy is the fantasy platform, reinventing the way daily and weekly games are played, and they've brought new games to the ballpark this year that fantasy players won't find anywhere else. Rival Fantasy's games include Fantasy Bingo, Head-to-Head Player Challenges, and Fantasy Book, where users can select over-unders for 2 to 5 players. With games like this, daily fantasy has never been better. Right now, RotoWire listeners can get a $50 protected first play. That means if you win your first play, you keep your winnings. But if you lose your first entry, Rival Fantasy will fully refund you up to $50. Go to play.rivalfantasy.com/signup and use code RotoWireMLB at signup. Deposit a minimum of $25 to get your first entry on Rival protected up to $50. Now's the time to step up to the plate and become a rival today. Welcome to the arena.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, let's analyze these current fantasy leaderboards. What do we have? Wins, ERA, whip, strikeouts, and saves. I'll let you go first. Give me your for real and your fade on wins. And let's get some really in-depth analysis for how a pitcher acquires a win.
So one thing I wanted to just point out through all of these things is, like, it just goes to show you that, like, all of this stuff, it's more about, like, you can attack categories, I think, a lot more with hitters than you can with pitchers. Like, there's nobody, like, there's no crappy starter on a really good team that I'm just going to be, like, adding because I think he might give me wins, right? Whereas, look, there are stolen base. If I'm down in that category, if I'm down in the home run category, I'm maybe more apt to add somebody who's going to be hitting like 175 who can hit, give me some home run help, or somebody who has zero home runs who might give me 40 stolen base pace. It's you just don't do that with pitchers. But I will say this, as much as I don't believe in Pittsburgh, I think Mitch Keller's for real, and I think he's going to help in the win category because I think he's going to go deep enough into games where I think he's going to give you those W's. And it's so refreshing to see how well Mitch Keller has pitched this year as a guy who was a huge fan of him as a prospect guy, had him on many top 10 lists for fantasy, and it just didn't work out. I mean, look, he came in with like a win-loss record of like 19-30, which, again, a little bit not his fault, but it's not like he pitched super well. He's been excellent this year, and it's been so impressive to see how nice of a job he's done with missing bats. He is somebody who I think it's worth pointing out is still only 27, even though it seems like he's been around absolutely forever. I'm absolutely believing in Mitch Keller as a guy who's not only going to help you in a bunch of categories, but I think he's going to help you in that win category. Someone I'm fading, and I think we're going to have to embrace debate here a little bit, Drew, because I do believe you're going to bring this guy up in another category. I'm not believing in Zach Eflin, especially in the win category, because it's the thing about Zach Eflin is, like, we've seen these flashes of brilliance from him before. He's actually only 29, and that's surprising to me. It seems like Zach Eflin has been around forever. Maybe it's because I covered that draft. That's one of the very first ones I did for ESPN. Like, he's been really good this year. He's getting hitters to chase at an elite rate, and he's throwing strikes at an elite rate, but he doesn't have an elite fastball. He doesn't get, he doesn't do an exceptional job avoiding barrels. Their fastball can be pretty straight. I like Tampa Bay too, but I also think that there may be no team through no fault of their own that is due for more regression than Tampa Bay Rays. It's hard to go at a 115 win pace. So that's the reason why I'm fading him in that category. There's some other categories to like as well for Zach Eflin. But in terms of wins, I do think that this pace is going to slow down pretty good.
We're not doing this right. I should be screaming at you, and then we'd get like a $10 million a year contract from FS1 or something.
Nice.
But yeah, I'll talk about Eflin a little bit actually coming right up. But for wins for me, I love what we've seen so far from Nathan Eovaldi there with the Rangers, who you were high on their wins total going into the year, and it looks like they might get there by, you know, early August. Sitting at the top of the AL West standings, and Eovaldi, I mean, you could put him in a bunch of different categories for this kind of experiment. Got that 2-year, $34 million contract from Texas in December, like looking like a heck of a bargain now for, a team that is, you know, leading the AL West, I think, coming into Saturday by 2.5 games. You know, the Astros are always going to be dangerous, but this could be a for real kind of thing for the Rangers in general. And the reason Eovaldi came relatively cheap is because of the injury concerns. Durability has been an issue for him throughout his career. He had a little side stiffness in camp. I remember writing this up, and it felt for a moment like a here we go again type of thing with him. Sure. But got through that fine, clean bill of health to open the regular season. And the results so far have been spectacular. A 2.42 ERA, 0.996 whip, 70 strikeouts, only 14 walks through 74 and a third innings, 7 wins and 11 starts. He's already thrown 2 complete games one shutout. Is Bruce Bochy like back managing, or what's going on with like this pitcher usage? I've got it in my ear. He is confirmed. He's the manager of the Rangers now.
I
love to see a guy like working deep into games.
Yeah.
It's just, we don't see it very often. And I love it for fantasy, and the command that Eovaldi has shown so far, like obviously helps the cause to work deep into games. He's in the middle of a 2-start week right now too. The second of those coming Sunday against your Mariners. Eovaldi got the nod on Memorial Day in Detroit. He threw 5 scoreless en route to notching his 7th win. His pitch count got up in that one. The command wasn't especially great, but worked out of jams well. If his health cooperates, like this is a fantasy gem and a free agency gem for the Rangers. Average draft position was in the 220 range, so like near the back end of shallower drafts. He's not a sexy name on draft boards, but man, he could be going into next year, and I'm sure there's plenty of people that have been trying to trade for him. Kyle Gibson is my fade with wins. He was my fade in one of these categories last time we did this. We did this about a month ago with hitters and pitchers. It could have been wins. And I guess the fact that he's still up near the top of the wins leaderboard is a credit to Gibson and what the Orioles are doing in general. And Gibson has been like a steadying force for them. He's helping the O's overcome what looked like a pretty rough opening day rotation on paper. Grayson Rodriguez didn't really work out, got sent back down. I have another Baltimore pitcher coming up in a different category. But despite like the overall success so far, Gibson just doesn't have the profile of the type of pitcher you're going to see high atop many leaderboards when all is said and done on the 2023 season, maybe innings. Like, he's been durable. He still is at age 35, but the underlying metrics here, and even some of like the back of the baseball card style of numbers aren't very high on what Gibson brings to the table. I think it's kind of an obvious fade. I went obvious there for wins because wins are dumb.
Wins are really dumb. And I'll tell you, I have an obvious fade for moving on to the ERA category, but I like both of those picks, especially Eovaldi. He's been fantastic, and I'm super nervous about my Seattle Mariners going up against him because that lineup is expletive deleted. For the ERA, let's talk about the guy who pitched against the Mariners last night and was fantastic, and he's been fantastic for the majority of the season. I'm buying into John Gray. It's a different profile than I thought he would be when he was the third overall pick out of Oklahoma. It certainly helps that he's not pitching in the cesspool of a pitching park that is Coors Field, but he's been outstanding, especially as of late. They believe this is now 5 straight starts where he's gone, allowed just one run and no more. He's getting deep into games. He's gone 7 for the last 2. He pitched 8 innings of shutout baseball against AA Midland, aka the Oakland Athletics. Like, and if you look at the StatCast numbers, like, he's been really impressive. His hard hit percentage is in the 80th percentile. His average exit velocity is well above average. He's not missing as many bats as I thought he would. Like I said, coming out of Oklahoma, where he was a guy who showed an 80 fastball and a 70 grade slider, but he's been pretty darn good. And I really like for wins, he was another guy that I like because I just really like this Texas Rangers lineup. And I think they can get better too, because they have a system that can maybe add some outfield help to that team and some bullpen help. That's one thing for sure that Texas is going to be looking at, is adding some bullpen arms. And my fade's a really easy one. It's Bryce Elder. Like, look, there's no denying how impressive this kid has been as a 24-year-old. He has a 1.92 ERA. I believe that is the best in baseball right now. There's absolutely no way this is sustainable. This is a guy who just doesn't have the stuff for it to be. He throws a well below average fastball that is not helped by spin. He doesn't generate a ton of extension on it. He has a really good slider, and he has a quality changeup. He's avoided barrels at a very nice rate, and he's throwing strikes for the most part. But you cannot have a 1.92 ERA with an average X velocity in the bottom 13th percentile and in a hard hit rate of the 9th percentile. All credit to Atlanta. They've done a fantastic job with profiles like this. But Bryce Elder may be the easiest ERA fade that I have ever talked about, although I don't think I've talked about more than one ERA fade in my life.
For me, Eduardo Rodriguez was going to be my for real pick here. Man, he looked like he was all the way back for the Tigers this year, and a really interesting trade candidate with that opt out looming. But
he suffered.
I'm gonna have to look up what exact diagnosis, a left index finger pulley rupture earlier this week. That's a new one for me. There have been some like past injuries. You have to like go back to early 2000s, 90s, where this was an issue for a different kind of pitcher. And it can be a several week thing. There's no real timetable yet from Detroit's medical staff. Just starters dropping like flies for the Tigers, who are kind of still in it. Like the American League Central is a lot like the National League Central. I feel bad for them. And the Riley Green thing, they could have capitalized on this down division and been an exciting team maybe this year. They have some young starters coming back soon too, so we'll see. Erod, like what he can opt out after this year. He would leave 3 years, $49 million on the table. Sign that 5 year, $77 million contract last year before some weird things happened behind the scenes, and he wasn't around the Tigers and wasn't very effective. If he gets off the IL and like keeps pitching like he has, a 2.13 ERA through 11 starts, 67 strikeouts, 67 innings. We can table that Erod discussion for now as the injury situation plays out, and maybe he gets back before the trade deadline. I'm trying to avoid that. I pick Zach Eflin as my for real on ERA.
Hey. Embrace it,
but just what an addition just for the Rays so far. They went really aggressive with him, like a 3 year, $40 million contract, I believe it was, this winter. We're to shocked. Make him, he really wanted to be like a traditional style starting pitcher. The Phillies didn't give him a chance to be one, but even then, like the Rays really identified him as someone they wanted. I don't know if he would have gotten $40 million from any team. And it's weird to say when you're talking about the Rays that they got aggressive with payroll. But so far, a 3.30 ERA, 57 strikeouts, only 8 walks in 60 innings. It's not an ERA in the twos, but if the control stays where it's at, you know, the number could very well drop moving forward. It just helps so much in the run prevention realm when you're not giving up free passes. Point made obvious. Like we'll see what happens with the workload. I think that's a thing that, you know, maybe you pointed out with wins. Like he's not really built up to be a 200 inning starter or anything really close to that. He's thrown over 100 innings just once in the last 4 years. Obviously COVID affected one of those years, but a good defense behind Eflin there with Tampa Bay and a great situation overall to, I think, keep thriving in terms of run prevention. He's been working deep. He's been avoiding big blowups. The game log with him is so weird, like 8 strikeouts over 7 innings on May 20th against the Brewers, then 0 strikeouts over 7 innings on May 25th against the Blue Jays. Mm-hmm. But all through it, you know, the expected ERA is 2.98. His average draft position was near 300 this spring. Even if he doesn't, you know, finish as a fantasy ace, because at some point his workload is going to have to be like naturally stunted. What an incredible value he's been. I'll fade that Sonny Gray is the best pitcher in baseball. Like his ERA suggests that he is right now, or might be, at least from a run prevention standpoint. 1.94 is the mark currently, the ERA. The FIP is 2.19. The ERA plus is 218, which leads all American League starters. And it all kind of like checks out. I was trying to poke holes here, but the strikeout rate has been up. He's allowed 0 home runs. Do I have that right? Can you double check that? I believe that's 250 batters faced, 0 home runs. That'll help the cause for a low ERA. Yeah. Sure. He allowed 36 homers among 488 batters faced in 2022. So already halfway to that total in batters faced. I would probably build that into my expectation for regression at some point somebody is going to go deep off Sonny Gray. Just in general, he's been more of a 3 ERA pitcher, sometimes 2s, but the career has had a lot of ups and downs for Gray, a lot of injuries, stretches of ineffectiveness. If he stays healthy, he's going to be a very good fantasy starter the rest of the way. Even with the expectation that the ERA will eventually rise out of the ones, a little more than a strikeout per inning, low three ERA, I think is where I see this all ending up. That's kind of the base projection for a guy like Sonny Gray. Then again, I don't know that I'd like necessarily categorize him as a sell high for fantasy managers, you know, depending on what you can get, of course, because again, the underlying metrics do check out, and we've seen, you know, spurts of dominance from him or like something close to it in the past. Mm-hmm. I'd say just enjoy the ride and like, don't expect that, you know, he's going to be the ERA leader at the end of the year, but if he keeps going and manages to avoid physical setbacks, he could finish as a top 20 starter. That's not like out of the range of possible outcomes.
No. And I think it's worth pointing out, we're already seeing that regression. Like in May, he had a 3.55 ERA. He's had three so-so starts in a row. I mean, this was going to happen. And it's worth pointing out that, like, we've picked the two guys who are leading baseball in ERA to fade, Bryce Elder at 1.92, Sonny Gray at 1.94. It's more about just the fact that baseball's hard, and sticking with an ERA under two, unless you're talking about one of these elite starters, is really, really hard. And I don't think either one of those guys qualifies as that. So yeah, just be prepared for some regression, especially with Elder for me. But Sonny Gray, certainly somebody that I'd be looking to at least fade in that one category. The whip category, I'm going to do a pair of Seattle Mariners. Maybe it's obvious, point is obvious, just not enough people talking about how good George Kirby is. This is a guy who just pounds the strike zone and is really taking a step forward this year. Walk percentage in the 99th percentile. I'm honestly surprised it's not in the 100th, because I don't know who's throwing more strikes than this guy right now. A 3.04 ERA. He's getting deep into games too. He's averaging more than six innings a start, went eight innings in his last start against the Yankees of shutout baseball. Look, there's no starter I trust to throw strikes right now more than George Kirby. And that is such a high compliment, because there's some really good hurlers out there, but George Kirby repeats his mechanics so well and lives inside of that strike zone. Trust his stuff maybe a little too much sometimes, but it is such impressive to see that a 25-year-old just pounds the strike zone. I am absolutely buying into George Kirby being a whip star for his entire career. I'm going to fade Logan Gilbert, though. Now, look, it's not about him not throwing strikes, because he's in the 93rd percentile, and he's had some unbelievably good starts too. And I think it's worth pointing out that a lot of websites think he's had some bad luck in terms of his overall ERA, which is 4.08, which is nothing to write home about. But there's been some dominant stuff. I just think he gives up a little too much hard contact for me to really believe in him as a whip guy. There's going to be some starts where he, even if he isn't walking guys, he's going to give up some hits. The limited shift, which I think is absolute, we've got to stop talking about it. It's barely limited at that. But, you know, like, there are some more hits going up into between that first base and second base hole. Average at avoiding barrels, average in getting actual swings and miss, does not have a lot of spin on his fastball. I think Logan Gilbert's capable of dominance, but there are just enough clunkers, for lack of a better term, that I'm kind of fading him overall in the whip category.
Joe Ryan is my for real here, even though he's coming off his worst outing of the year this past week against the Astros. Five earned runs on four hits and three walks in four innings to take just his second loss of the season. But Ryan's been great otherwise. Yeah. Overall, a 2.77 ERA, 1.00 on the dot whip, 76 strikeouts with just 13 walks through 65 innings, 7-2 record. Everything you'd want if you'd reach for him in drafts this spring, thinking there was another step forward for him to take after his mini breakout, or you could even call it a full-on breakout in 2022, however you want to define it. The analysis was that his fastball was really good, but he probably needs to improve his secondary offerings to stay where he was last year or even take a step forward. And Ryan's done that. The splitter, the slider, it looks like he fully abandoned the changeup, which wasn't a good pitch for him. The kind of tweaks you like to see, like toying with the arsenal, keeping the good, getting rid of the bad, and all with excellent command to like pull this off, to make these kind of changes. You can punch holes in a lot with Ryan, that he's not an elite starter, that he's not an ace overall, a fantasy ace or like a budding real life ace, but the whip,
sure,
I'd count on that being there the rest of the way, because he doesn't pile up, you know, free passes like we talked about. It's obvious. He has more ways to get batters out this year than he did last year when the numbers were already super encouraging. So I really like it, like what he's developing into. I don't know that he's going to be ever like an ace,
mm-hmm.
but man, like, cause he was never a top 100 prospect. But the minor league numbers like suggest that it all points to him being a pretty good starter. I don't know if you want to talk about Joe Ryan before I get into my fade.
No, I was just going to really quick say just two things about Joe Ryan. One, he kind of was at the edge for me of top 100, but it doesn't matter. What you're talking about is 100% right. One other thing I wanted to mention, when people tell you that the Tampa Bay Rays don't lose trades, just bring that one up and they will shut up for a very long time, because Joe Ryan for Nelson Cruz isn't just a bad trade for the Rays. It's a bad trade for anybody. Nelson Cruz didn't do crap for the Tampa Bay Rays. And Joe Ryan, whether you believe is a fantasy ace or a mid-rotation starter, a lot more valuable to them than what Nelson Cruz was going to give that team. So please stop telling
Rays me that were Tampa Bay
Rays don't lose trades.
They were so desperate for some kind of power that year. And everyone was saying they got to get a power bat. And they did it, even though they identified Ryan. And, man, he would fit so well in that pitching staff. But he'd be some kind of long relief swingman role. We'd be frustrated. I'm glad he's with Minnesota.
Yes, we would.
I'll fade another Orioles pitcher here with Tyler Wells. A 0.825 whip right now to lead all major league starters. A 3.29 ERA, like this far into the season, you usually don't find that great of a ERA whip discrepancy with a starting pitcher.
Right.
He's allowed some hard contact, 13 homers through 10 starts. Wells is throwing this new cutter, and he told Alex Fast of Pitcher List that it's something he was toying with all spring and that he kind of found it like just at the close of the Grapefruit League schedule. So maybe there's a real leap happening here for him at age 28, but count me as like at least a little bit skeptical that he's going to be the MLB leader in whip the rest of the way. Wells is not a velocity guy. He attacks the zone. And there's maybe been some luck with not getting barreled up by opposing hitters as much as he should be. It's an interesting arsenal. He's almost like a junk baller with command. I mean, there's a comp here to Joe Ryan, I guess, if you really want to stretch it. But I just don't see dominance. I see big league hitters figuring him out eventually. He gets the Giants next on Sunday. That one might make me look bad because, well, should be able to navigate that Giants lineup.
Right.
And he was like free in most drafts or most leagues, a waiver wire dude. There isn't even a listed average draft position for him in standard formats. I had to look it up, 541. At NFBC, and you and I talked about Wells last year, talked about like a lot of Orioles pitchers. There's something there, and it's awesome that he has great command. Like, you know, Shane Bieber is like the poster child for this, like a guy that has great command and can toy with his arsenal and add different ways to get batters out. Like maybe he's actually taking this step forward, but I feel like he's had a lot of luck so far.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I will say that this is the one category I really like him in. However, a 0.83 whip ain't happening. Like that's just not sustainable. One of the things that I think makes me like him in this category a little more is that he does throw a lot of strikes. He does get a lot of spin on his pitches. His fastball spin is in the 89th percentile, curve spin in the 71st percentile. But there's just going to be some clunkers, man, where he doesn't have his bad command and things can go real bad. And that 0.83 can turn into 0.95, can turn into 1.14, so on and so forth, awfully quick, because he just doesn't have the stuff to make up for the days where he doesn't have his best feel. Strikeouts, which is an actual fun category to talk about. Obvious point is obvious, I guess, but I'm all in on Hunter Green. I've been so impressed with what I've seen from Hunter Green, especially as of late. Did have that one bad start in Colorado. Who cares? Colorado isn't even a real place. I'm not even sure Colorado should count for like fantasy leagues. Like you should take it and like take 1/4 of the stats that happened in Colorado and just take them away. But look, this is a guy who has elite fastball, and it is like you're seeing it. His fastball velocity is in the 97th percentile. He gets plenty of spin on it and get hitters to swing at it. Yeah, there's going to be some ups and downs for a 23-year-old. It's so crazy that Hunter Greene, we talked about age stuff. It is so crazy that Hunter Greene is only 23 years old. Like, he seems like he's been around for so long. But the one thing I know this dude is going to do is he is going to miss bats. He is going to pile up the strikeouts, even with some slowdown and some other numbers. And he's also had some bad luck as well. Like, his overall metrics suggest he's been much better than the 3.92 ERA that he's posted. But I think he's going to be a helper, at least in that category for sure. Lance Lynn is my fade, and it's weird to be talking about him as a fade because he's been dreadful. The reason I'm fading him is because I'm not so sure I want Lance Lynn, even if he's getting strikeouts, starting for my team. This guy is a 6.55 ERA and a 1.51 whip. Now, look, Lance Lynn has been a favorite for a lot of people for a long time, and I get it because he goes deep into games, or he has been going deep into games for most of his career. But he's been getting hit so hard this year that it doesn't really matter to me that his whiff rate is above average and his fastball spin is well above average. Because when your expected ERA is in the bottom 17th percent and you are in the bottom, near the bottom of baseball in expected slugging percentage and fastball velocity and a whole bunch of other stats, it's not worth it to me. So even if Lance Lynn does give you 6 or 7 strikeouts in 5 innings, it's not worth the 4 or 5 runs that he's giving up. The White Sox kind of stink.
I mean, was that your declarative statement on Lance Lynn?
They kind of stink. Yeah, they kind of stink.
Yeah, but hey, they're in a central division, so they're alive.
I know. Would you, real quick, before you get into yours, if you're the Chicago White Sox, would you consider trading Tim Anderson?
Yeah.
1 year left, by the way. I think I would too. And I think they should be trading him to the Seattle Mariners, because I think that the Seattle Mariners need a second baseman. And I think either JP Crawford or Tim Anderson would be just fine there, but I absolutely would be.
There's been like outside connections with the Dodgers too. There's a lot of stuff going on, but I think I said this with Ryan Boyer last week, like a lot of people are wanting to trade the White Sox players, but I don't think the White Sox are ready to give up on this season yet.
Probably not.
I think, because why would you? There's no reason to really do the sell-off. Well, all right.
Here's the thing.
Why would you, is a bad question.
Yes. I look, there's a lot of hubris in that organization, maybe more hubris than any organization in baseball right now, and they hate to admit when they're wrong about this stuff. But they're bad, man. Like, yes, they're still in the division technically. They're only 7.5 games back. But do you really think that team is better than Minnesota? Do you think that team's even better than Cleveland? Like, and you are not getting a wild card spot. That has been already eliminated. Yeah. It is mathematically impossible.
I think you have to catch the Twins
or the Guardians.
I think it's a better team than the Guardians. I was down on the Guardians coming to the year. The Twins had stability because the Twins have a little bit of, I do have a White Sox hat. I should have worn it today.
You should have.
The Twins have some stability because they have the starting pitching. But
yeah,
I like that lineup, and now Byron Buxton, you know, his durability is, even though they've like protected him by putting him in the DH spot, even though they have a lot of other players they could rotate through the DH spot, he's having some injury issues again.
Yeah.
It's a team that could kind of fall apart a little bit. And the Guardians have the worst, like so far, the worst offense in baseball, which is not really a surprise. Like Josh Bell and Mike Zunino were not going to cure your offensive issues.
No. On the contrary, for the latter one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. There have been a lot of people in the chat talk about Pablo Lopez, and he's my for real on strikeouts. Yeah. And he's regressed significantly in his last two turns in the Twins rotation. The ERA is now up in the mid fours, but the K's are still cooking. 86 strikeouts through 71 and a third innings, 12 starts so far for Minnesota. Lopez was never a huge strikeout compiler during his time with the Marlins. 174 K's in a career high, 180 innings last year. You know, good, not great, but there have always been hints that Pablo Lopez Pablo Lopez could generate more swing and misses. Like the CSW, the called strike plus whiff rate, that's what that means, right? Called strike plus whiff, has suggested that he should be getting more strikeouts all along. And this year, it finally is happening, even as the ERA has been a stinker lately. His velocity is up from where it was in 2022. That helps everything. Has that excellent changeup, throwing a lot of sweepers. I think his recent rough to like mediocre starts are more of a blip, and that you can feel, I think, comfortably optimistic about Lopez being a top 30, top 25, pushing toward the top 20 fantasy starter the rest of the way. Certainly, like, that's buoyed by the strikeouts if he maintains the strikeout rate that he's shown so far, but I think he can. But also, I think some positive regression. We've talked about regression in a negative way, but there's positive regression with ERA, and he'll be fine in that department. I don't think he's going to finish as a mid four ERA kind of pitcher. He's pitched better than that. And you know, we're early in the season. It's small sample size. I think he's going to get back down to the threes, and could wind up being, you know, a 220 plus strikeout type of pitcher at the end of the day. I'll fade Mackenzie Gore, who I really like, and I'm all about seeing him thrive now with the Nationals after, you know, so many stops and starts in the early part of his career, a former top prospect, you know, finally enjoying stability and success. I say finally, he just turned 24 years old this spring, but Gore was drafted out of high school by the Padres in 2017, the third overall pick in that draft. It's been a long and winding road to where he is today.
Yes.
He was nasty. I'm going to start going to a Beatles song. Gore was nasty last time out against the Royals. 11 strikeouts over 7 innings of one-run ball. He's now up to 74 strikeouts and 58 innings this season. But you worry about where the workload crunch starts setting in. And the Nationals have been pretty open about playing this all carefully, that he will at some point have to be treated with shorter outings or be skipped. Maybe like moves to the bullpen for a little bit. Maybe they're going to kind of game what his end of season innings total will be. And that's going to create a lot of frustration in fantasy, obviously, because, you know, there've been a lot of injuries. There's been changes in organizations. He's just not built up to be a 150 inning guy. And there's no reason for the Nationals to push him to be that. Like they might want to stall him around 120 innings, maybe 130. So that's the reason for the fade, knowing that the Nats are not playing for anything in 2023. I think I'll love Gore in drafts for 2024 if he makes it through this year healthy. Like that's a full-on breakout candidate. If you can sell high in fantasy to somebody who doesn't know that there's a workload concern, I guess good luck finding that guy if you're in a competitive league. But I love everything that's happening with Mackenzie Gore, but you know at some point he's going to have to hit a wall, and even if it's just the Nationals creating a wall for him.
Yeah, I mean, look, long term, I'm a huge Mackenzie Gore fan, but just the fact that I don't believe in this Nationals lineup, and like you, everything you said about the innings limit stuff is, it's just not going to be. I would definitely sell high on him in redraft. I'm not selling him at all in Dynasty and Keeper. I think he has chance to be a absolute pitching superstar. By the way, do you know who Pablo Lopez was traded for from the Mariners side? The Pablo Lopez trade. Do you remember?
No,
that?
Way back when.
David Phelps, really good move, Mr. DePoto. Doesn't make me sad at all. That was a DePoto move. Yeah, that was, really? I believe, 2017. Yeah, traded with Brian Hernandez, Brandon Miller, and Lucas Schiraldi for David Phelps, who, you know, he was like a legitimate high-end reliever, but whoopsie Daisy, because oh my gosh, how good would Pablo Lopez look with that starting pitching staff right now and their development of pitchers? I'm trying to avoid talking about saves because it's my least favorite category to ever exist.
Let's just not even do it. Let's close out.
Yeah, okay. Well, this was fun. We'll talk about Camilo Duvall is my buy, and it's mostly about the fact that, look, When I'm looking for relievers to acquire at this point, I start to first think about what I'm doing with my life. And second, I like to look at whether or not they're playing for a team that is okay, but it's going to play a lot of close games and give me a bunch of chances. And I think the Giants are kind of the definition of that team. And that's the reason why Duvall has already saved 14 games. On top of that, he's been really good. His whiff percentage, his fastball velocity, his fastball spin, expected ERA, all above the 90th percentile, 98th percentile in strikeouts. Like, I think there was some concern about whether or not this guy was actually going to be the set it and forget it save guy, but he's getting the majority of the chances there and then some. I really like Duvall. I could also see him being a guy who could be moved to a contender, which is a little bit concerning, because if he gets moved, then you're not talking about him being the closer necessarily. And that's the reason why I'm going to pick as my fade David Bednar. I am terrified if I have him on my roster that he's going to get traded to a team and not be the closer anymore. And look, yeah, as good as his rates are, and oh my goodness gracious, like if you look at his Baseball Savant page, he looks like the results of an Idaho election. Like there is just that much red that is going on with that guy. His walk percentage is elite. I don't think he's actually walked anybody this year, which is pretty good. Expected batting average of 170 against. Like he's an elite reliever, but if he gets traded to a team and becomes the high leverage guy that you use in a whole bunch of situations and isn't guaranteed saves, I'm sorry, that's just not as valuable in fantasy. I think Jeff Bazan brought up a really good point that Bednar is a yinzer. I think he is a guy who wants to stay in Pittsburgh, so that is something they know that could be held. And it's also like you can move David Bednar in the offseason if you decide that you don't want to pay him elite closer money. And I can't see Pittsburgh paying a reliever elite closer money based on, oh, I don't know, history. Yeah. And probably not. I mean, look, if you're not going to sign real life baseball players, why spend all of your money on a bullpen arm? But as much as I like David Bednar, he would be someone I'd be looking to sell high on, because if he gets moved to another team and he is not that closer, his value drops fairly precipitously.
Yeah, there are a lot of those guys that, you know, are above. There's like, yeah, several of them on that leaderboard right now where it's like if they get traded, you could just drop in value. But every fantasy manager knows how this goes. I'll go with Jason Adam as my. I don't know, man, because it's like it's a category and we're trying to do all the categories.
Everybody knows what we're talking about. I'm not happy about it either. Goodness gracious. We got to talk after the show, man.
Someone's got to do it. I'll talk Top Chef, but I'm going to spoil the latest episode.
We got in trouble the last time we did that.
My wife was crying at the end of the episode. I'll just tell you that. Oh, like, it was an emotional episode. She couldn't stop crying.
It was good. If that now gives you any idea about closers, yeah.
But if that gives you, I know you haven't seen the latest one yet, but it was a great episode. It's their first one in Paris. Anyway, I'll go with Jason Adam as my for real. You know, the Rays, I think, standout reliever. Pete Fairbanks is back on the injured list, this time with left hip inflammation. He was also diagnosed with Raynaud's syndrome last month, like blood flow issues to his fingers. Fairbanks had an issue with forearm inflammation that required a previous IL stint. I know that it's tricky with the Rays, how they don't often have locked in roles for their relievers, because as a smart team, like, why would you? Throw your best reliever in the best situation. But they're going to have to lean more on Adam to handle save opportunities. You'd think, like, the depth chart and, like, the game script lines up for him to get most of the chances. He primarily pitched in the eighth or ninth inning throughout May. Like, you look at his game log, actually didn't earn a save in April, Adam, but now it's seven of them, all racked up in the last 4 weeks. He can work multiple innings too. The Rays have done that with him already. They bring Adam in for the eighth, and then he stays in for the ninth. Out of need or whatever, you'll take that, and he can handle doing it. You know, Fairbanks might be back later this month, but the durability stuff with him is piling up. I think there's maybe an opportunity for Adam to run away with, I'm not going to say like the closer job, but a primary share of it, and that he'll wind up getting the most of the save chances for what has been the best team in baseball still, surprising or not. They had a bunch of blowout wins early on, but they're playing closer games recently because, you know, baseball is hard, which is, you know, where you get the saves in these close games. And I think Adam will be the guy they call in to put out fires, but if they can save him for the ninth, they'll do it. I think Kevin Cash, the Rays manager, has proven that he's okay with more defined roles if, you know, the situation calls for it. They want to run. I say this all the time with the Rays. Like, the perception is like, oh, they do things differently than other teams in baseball because they're smarter. No, they do things differently because they have to, because they have such a low payroll. But when they have starters, you know, Shane McClanahan, that can go, even with Zach Eflin, when they have starters that can be treated as traditional starters, when they have relievers that, it's a little bit different with the bullpen, but they want to be able to have traditional, you know, pitching roles. They just haven't been able to in the past because they don't have the riches that they have right now. Pierce Johnson is my fate. I'm going to go out on a limb here, Chris, and I'm going to fade the Rockies closer.
What if Pierce Johnson's traded, though? What if Pierce Johnson is traded to a contender and he is the closer? Are you a little more excited by that or no? Still,
it's not, dude. He has a 6.85 ERA. Like, I was trying to end the show on almost a joke.
Okay,
he blew a chance on Thursday.
Yeah, he sucks. Good. He's not a good pitcher. Pierce Johnson is just not a good.
Yeah,
no.
If anyone, but he's got 11 saves. Like, if you projected Pierce Johnson to be at a double-digit save total on June 3rd, you know, you'd be like your buddy who hit the $60,000 parlay. Yeah. Even more, I would take greater odds than that. Yeah, go ahead.
This is actually a pretty good question. The Hart Foundation, I have Adams for Fairbanks since he's on IR. Would you go with Will Smith over both? He's available in my league. I think I might. And here's the thing. We talked about the Rangers. Like, I think they maybe want to go with Will Smith as that closer guy, the guy who throws in that, you know, it's a three-run game and you just want the guy who's had success doing it type of thing. Like, I think the Rangers are going
Bruce to make Bochy, a trade. Baby.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, and having if they make that trade for a Bednar or for somebody of that ilk, that reliever type of thing, I think they'll use him as that seventh, eighth inning guy to be that guy who's getting through the order. And then Will Smith has basically become the Mark Melanson, the guy who is counted on in the 5-2 baseball game to get the save because you know he isn't going to have a blow up. So I think I maybe would prefer Will Smith because I think he's pretty locked into that closer role right now.
I think he should, if he's available in your league, which the comment says, you should pick up Will Smith. He earned a 7-pitch save the other night. He's perfect for that kind of Bruce Bochy back into the bullpen role. Right. I would rather have Adam and have Fairbanks sit in an IL spot. I would rather have Adam than Will Smith because he's just better.
Okay.
But sometimes better doesn't really matter for this category, which is why it's hard to talk about it, like, and offer like expert analysis on it.
For sure. One other question before we fade
Pierce Johnson. Okay, go ahead. You handle, because I'm actually Andrés Muñoz is out there in a lot of leagues, even though he's on the IL. Like, what do you do with the? Do you have a read on what the Mariners are going to do?
So, kind of. It's a little difficult. So the question for those who are listening is: do you think Andrés Muñoz will take over the closer spot once he gets back from the IL for the Mariners? I don't think so. I don't think he's going to get the majority of save chances. Paul Sewald has been so good in that role. Like, if you take a look at his ERA, it's extremely misleading because what he'll do in a four-run game is say, I don't care. I'm going to throw fastballs down the middle of the plate and everything is going – like, he is the literal – Jack Morris would really get along because pitch to the score is what Paul Sewald has done. Like, take a look at his ERA in save situations versus non-save situations. It's crazy. They trust him so much in that role. And Andrés Muñoz, they want to keep him healthy. They want to make sure that he's, you know, a huge part of the long-term stuff. I think they're going to kind of ease him into high leverage stuff when he first comes back. It is worth pointing out that this was considered a 2-week injury at first, and now has been a much longer than 2-week injury, Drew, which is something that if you're going to take one thing from this podcast, don't believe anything a GM ever tells you about a pitcher. Like if they tell you a couple of weeks with shoulder inflammation, they tell you a couple of weeks with a flexor strain, they are lying to you. But I don't think Andrés Muñoz is going to be the set it and forget it closer for them. He could be in the long term, but I don't think so. Uncle Ted brings up that Prelander was converted to closer. He's the next Diaz. No, he's not. But Prelander Baroa is actually a very interesting relief pitcher. He's a guy who throws a ridiculous slider and has a ton of movement on his fastball. He's definitely a guy to keep in the long term, but we probably shouldn't compare him to Edwin Diaz.
Stop arguing with the commenters, Chris.
I'm not arguing. I'm just saying. Uncle Ted, thank you very much for the question, and I appreciate all of the stuff that you do for this chat. You are a gentleman.
Yeah, we do appreciate like our regular people that tune in. That'll do it for us, though, on this episode of the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I don't want to talk saves anymore. This show has been brought to you by Rival Fantasy. Go to rivalfantasy.com or download the app today and start playing a far better form of daily fantasy baseball. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Drew Silve. Chris is at Crawford_MILB. Rate and review the show if you like what you're hearing. Hit that subscribe button on YouTube or on your podcast formats as well. And check out more episodes from a variety of hosts on a variety of topics every day of the week. Peace out.
Bye.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.